is no guarantee for success, but there are ways to get closer to it when you do the right things. Who you surround yourself with is just as important as what you do. Finding the right people, the right classes, the right activities, and taking the right tests are all decisions that shape your future. Find out more today on Destination University with Dr. Cynthia Colon. Dr. Colon and her guests will give you the tips you need, whether you're a student, parent, or educator. Now, here is your host, Dr. Cynthia Colon.
Do you remember that moment when a teacher first pushed you to do better, make better choices, or be a better community member? It may have been a reminder to pick up the piece of trash you walked by, or a gentle reminder about homework. Or maybe that teacher pulled you aside to remind you that you are a leader in the classroom. Those are the moments when teens make a choice to improve self. Have you ever been so moved by a classroom discussion that you were inspired to learn more or decided that that's what you want to study in college? Those are moments of inspiration. Was there an event that triggered a real passion and you decided that you wanted to deliver water purification instruments to countries in need of a clean water supply? Those are moments of impact. The lesson today is this: we cannot leave an impact until we can first improve and inspire ourselves and our immediate communities. My question is, how do we as educators reflect on the current needs, alter the direction when necessary, and create vision for impact and for our future? With the largest and most diverse archdiocese in the United States, our guest today, Dr. Kevin Baxter, is charged with leading a school system of over 80,000 students. Kevin is a product of Catholic schools, and today he has a vision to improve schools, inspire leaders, and eventually impact Catholic education. I'm Cynthia Colon, author of the book Tips, Tales, and Truths for Teens. Welcome to Destination University, where we explore extraordinary people who lived ordinary childhoods and found a pathway to college for themselves, or for others, or went back years later. Well, welcome, Dr. Baxter. It's such a pleasure and an honor to have you here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's great to be with you as well.
Oh, good. Now, for those listeners who are listening across the country, I would love it if you just share a little bit about, you know, what does it mean to be a superintendent for Catholic schools and lead an organization of over 80,000 students?
Well, it's a lot, and I think to be a superintendent of a Catholic school system is much different than a public school district, for example. And again, so people might have different contexts for how they think of that title, superintendent. We have 215 K-8 schools, elementary schools, we describe them as, and we have 51 high schools over three different counties, L.A., Ventura, and Santa Barbara County. So about an 8,800 square mile area. We have our 266
wow.
schools. So it's a lot going on all the time, and we have a great staff here at the Department of Catholic Schools to help us deliver on that. Our goal is really to set the vision for what we want to achieve with regard to our Catholic schools, really set the direction, and then help build capacity, collective capacity at school sites, in the principals and the teachers, obviously parent communities, so they can deliver a high-quality, faith-filled education for the students that they serve, and obviously then those students go on to impact the world with their leadership in the future.
I love that, and I love that we're going to talk today about, you know, improvement and inspiration and impact, because you're right, it is different than leading a public school system in a school district, and so much of what we do always comes back to faith, and I say faith in that very religious and spiritual way, but also faith that things, you know, we have a vision, we have a plan, and we have faith in things that we cannot yet see, right? So
right.
I think that you've been a great leader for this system, and I'm excited for our listeners to really learn a little bit more, not just about the Archdiocese, but specifically about, you know, what your vision is for now and in the future. Kevin, thanks for agreeing to be here. And this, as you heard in the intro, this show is really about, you know, extraordinary people like yourself who lived ordinary childhoods, and sort of, you know, this is about how to get to college and what took place in your childhood that we can learn and our listeners can learn from. So why don't you start by just sharing a little bit about where you grew up, your family, and sort of what does that look like, and share a little bit about your childhood.
Sure. I grew up across the country, actually, from Los Angeles. I grew up in New York. I was born in Garden City on Long Island, and lived there till I was about 6 or 7. Moved to South Carolina, actually, for one brief year. I have a sister, actually, who was born down in South Carolina. And then we moved back up to New York, and we moved north of the city about 45 minutes, and that's still where I consider home. I'm one of five. I have two brothers. I have an older brother and then a younger brother, and then the three boys are the oldest, and then we have two younger sisters. And so lived up in a very Catholic household, I would say. We were very involved yeah. with our local parish. We went to Catholic schools. And that parish community was really kind of the center of our kind of upbringing in our life. And I think that's kind of helped to form a lot of what I'm passionate about, a lot of what I believe about the power of our Catholic schools and what they can do for young people is based on my experience as a young person. And so when I walk through our Catholic schools today, I often try to reflect back on my own time in my own school and think about the impact that it had on me, and just, you know, work hard and hope to ensure that our students in our schools today are experiencing that same wonderful gift, and it'll have a similar impact on their lives as they grow up.
Right. I've had some other guests that have talked about how community is very meaningful, right? It has a lot to do with how we're shaped as children. And you can really speak to the fact that, you know, when we're young, or for you, that you have the parish, that's a community. And we have school, that's a community as well. But in many, maybe in your own childhood, but also I know that some of the schools that are part of that 266 schools, they're one and the same. And so can you talk a little bit about how, for you, school and parish were one or were sometimes separate? How did those two communities together shape you?
That's a great question, Cynthia, because when I was a child, it was very much kind of one entity, if you will, that the parish and the school were really seen as part of the same. So all of my friends, you know, I'd see them at Mass on Sundays, or their parents were involved in the parish, and then you'd see them at church, and then you'd be in school with them on during the week. And that was just the normal kind of way of how the operation kind of worked and how Catholic schools operated. We still have number of schools like that today, but we do see an increase in what we might call commuter schools or more transitory populations, meaning we might see families traveling a little bit more. So maybe they worship in one parish, or they're traveling a distance because it's where mom and dad work, and they're dropping their children off at a school that might be 20, 25 minutes away. And so what that brings to our work, and what it challenges us to do is to make sure we're building that community that you talked about that really is so important. And so often it can be a challenge, but a really good challenge in recognizing the fact that we might have a student population at a specific school that doesn't necessarily largely worship at that same parish. So how do we make sure that there's still that connection, that there's still that unanimity between both the parish and the school? Because our Catholic schools are incredibly awesome because we offer an outstanding academic education, and I'm very proud of that. But really, the core of our secret sauce, or the core of why we're special, is that faith life, is that sense of I like to say that we're educating the heart and soul as well as the mind, right? So we want to see both those pieces. So we want to make sure, if we do have those types of communities where maybe a vast majority of the student population isn't worshiping in that parish, that we still are intentional about making sure that they're collaborating and talking with one another and that they have a very good working relationship.
Yeah, I love the topic of community and how we build that, because, you know, it's literal, it's figurative, it's all of those things that we want our students to feel part of and connected to. So I really thank you for sharing that, because it's different, right? When we were young, you know, we all went to the sort of the local school. We played in the streets with the neighbors, and those were that was the community. And for you, it sounds like, you know, the parish and the school is the same people. So how do we continue? I love what you said about heart and soul and minds. And this is a good reminder to me. I always forget to say this at the front end. Listeners, wherever you are, make sure you have a pen and paper, because there are always such golden nuggets that my guests always have such great things to say. And if you didn't catch that, Dr. Baxter talked about that Catholic schools do a great job of really feeding, I don't think this is his word, but feeding and fueling the heart and soul as well as the mind, which was really great. And their mission is to send off graduates who leave an impact in the world. So, excellent. Kevin, to take us back to your own journey, I know that you were quite involved in school. So catch us up. Now you're in high school. What kinds of things were you involved in? Who supported you? Who are your supporters, your cheerleaders, and your believers? So what was that like for you in high school?
So I had a great high school experience. I was... I think back on it, I did a number of different things in high school, but I largely thought of myself as an athlete. I played football and basketball and lacrosse for a season or two. Lacrosse, that is. I played football 4 years and basketball 4 years, and felt that was my, you know, talk about community. That was definitely one of the communities that I remember back on high school, and the people I played sports with were very, very special. They still are, and they're often ones that I still am connected with, you know, on Facebook and other things. But I was also involved, and I was involved in student National Honor Society, and I was president of the senior class, and had great friends. I was a very small Catholic high school I went to. My cheerleaders, I think, obviously, I have to always start with my mom and dad. My parents were huge cheerleaders, and they had huge expectations for all of us that were not always, I guess they didn't have to be clearly articulated. They were implied. But you know, you had to do well because college was gonna happen for you, and they had that expectation for each and every one of us. So trying to think about that and kind of understanding that reality as I made my way through high school, helped to just kind of get me thinking in that direction early on. So I wasn't, you know, I wasn't scrambling at the end to try to find somewhere to go. I was thinking about that fairly early in high school.
Where do you fall in the five siblings? I know you're one of the first three because they're all boys. So where do you fall in that?
I'm the second. So I'm the middle boy and the second oldest in the family. Yes.
Okay. So you had at least one sibling who had already gone through this process of navigating the college admission process. And so you had at least someone in front of you. Tell us about, was there a counselor or a teacher who, inspired you, right? So today we're talking about, you know, how did you improve yourself in the classroom or on the court or on the football field, or who inspired you in the classroom or at school?
So I had a number of teachers who were very inspirational and very very motivating, you know, and kind of tapped into my natural I think interest level and knew what I was interested in. I would work harder at to improve upon. I actually had very, very kind of great coaches and people who were just special people I still think about. We had a football coach. His name was Trevor Jones, and he was a teacher, and he used to have all these pithy savings, you know, whatever the mind can conceive and believe it can achieve, you know, and he would kind of recite these things to us, and it's just funny how you still remember those, you know, now 30 years later, 25, 30 years later.
Yeah.
It's funny how those little things have impact on you, because I think you hear them sometimes, and as a teenager, you think it's a little goofy, or maybe even you talk to your friend afterwards and like, a coach is saying all this stuff. But you realize the impact it's having on you when you thought about it periodically now for the next few decades, and how it probably has definitely shaped, you know, how you've viewed viewed accomplishment and viewed hard work that would result in a future success.
Right. I love all kinds of things that coaches say, because those are, you know, those little nuggets, as we call, as I call them, golden nuggets, that somehow they do seep into your mind. And that, you know, I think I wrote down mostly what you said: whatever the mind can conceive, it can achieve, which I love. It's great.
Yeah, it's conceive and believe, which I always thought was the key.
Right. Well, we talk about who are your team of supporters, your village of cheerleaders, and community of believers. And belief has to start with you, so that's great. Say a little bit, we're just getting close to break for our first break, but say a little bit about the fact that you did not only athletics, but also you did a little bit of theater in high school.
I did. I did theater as well, and so was in a couple of different plays. We did a Shakespeare play, and we did 12 Angry Jurors. It was a great experience, you know, and I think that also kind of lit a little bit of the acting bug for me. Don't want to jump too far ahead, but after college, when I came out to Los Angeles, it was originally to try to look at acting and see if that was something I wanted to try to pursue. I was with a friend of mine that I grew up with back east, and so I think that probably got the spark got lit probably in high school when I was doing that. And then I also did some things in college that were along those lines as well. But I enjoyed it very much. And again, I think, you know, and you do a lot of this, I know, Cynthia, but when I talk to young people, it's, you've got to find your tribe in high school. You've got to find your community. Mm-hmm. You've got to find that group. And it could be athletics. It could be music. It could be drama. It could be art. It could be a number of different things. But when you find that group, and maybe you have multiple groups too, but that's what really kind of gives you an enriching academic experience, gives you when you're doing things you're passionate about, that's going to come through in your college application, your college essay, and that's what people are going to be really attracted to, is when you're doing something that you're passionate about.
Absolutely. You're so right on. Oh my gosh. If you are just catching us right now, we are with Dr. Kevin Baxter, and we are talking today about improving, inspiration, and impact. If you don't have a piece of paper and pen, grab it. And also, as I like to say, grab your beverage of choice. Get cozy. We're going to come back, and you're going to want to take notes, because Kevin is here with lots of golden nuggets. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you ready to become the applicant every college wants to admit? Would you like to become the adult that models success? Then join the thousands of students, parents, and educators who have found the perfect solution. Dr. Cynthia Colone, author of Tips, Tales, and Truths for Teens, offers motivational and empowering workshops and keynote addresses for your school or organization. She fuels confidence in students on their road to university life. Cynthia coaches parents, educators, and professionals to model a success mindset for students. Go to drcynthiacolone.com to book her to speak, receive a free consultation, or have her as your personal coach. That's drcynthiacolone. drcynthiacolone.com. Visit the site today.
Are you finding your frequency? It can be described as that space between failure and success. It's the future of digital media. It's finding your voice. It's engaging topics, content, and ideas. Jeff and Ryan discuss the digital media space and all of its aspects. It's about making the mistakes, taking the chances, summoning the intestinal fortitude to step out of your comfort zone, and discovering what you can accomplish when you decide to try, decide to learn, decide that you have something to say, and find your frequency. Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are tuned into Destination University. If you have a question about the program for Dr. Cynthia Colon, please send an email to destinationuniversity@gmail.com. That's Destination University with a Y-O-U at gmail.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Cynthia Colon. I'm here today with Dr. Kevin Baxter, who is the current senior director and superintendent of Catholic schools for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, which he oversees and leads a student population of over 80,000 students, which is just unbelievable to me. So excited to have you. If I haven't said this already, thank you for saying yes, and it's an honor to have you here today, Kevin. So welcome back, everyone. If you're just catching us, we were talking about Kevin's high school experience, and we were just at the point where he's now basically a senior. And so, Kevin, talk to us about what that senior year was like. You had a brother who had already been through the process. So what was the, if for you, how did you navigate the college admission process?
So I was interested in playing sport. I wanted to play football and or basketball, but football was my primary love at that point. And so my brother, who graduated a year ahead of me, went to Villanova University in Philadelphia, or outside Philadelphia. And so my senior year was the initial part, obviously. This was kind of the fall when we were playing sports. I was looking at a few different schools. So I was looking at Holy Cross in kind of the Boston area, and then Williams, which was kind of a high-end or kind of liberal arts school. And Williams especially had kind of a 2A program, so it was kind of a lower-level program. And I looked at both those schools and talked to the football coach and saw if there could be any assistance and any, you know, I was not good enough to get any kind of full scholarship, but see if there was any kind of financial aid I could get if I played sports. And then I also obviously looked at Villanova. And I think one of the key things for me is I visited my brother a few times, you know, on the weekends when he was a freshman at Villanova. And so I got to meet his friends and got to see his life there. And I think that obviously had a profound effect on me. And when the football stuff really didn't pan out, I ended up going to Villanova and kind of following my brother to that school. So it was a good experience. I think it was great to be able to look at a diverse number of schools, kind of have some consideration and look at some different options. And then I fell really in love, with Villanova when I was actually able to go there. And that's a great lesson too, obviously, for everybody, is to make sure you're visiting where you're going to go. And I think it's kind of a no-brainer now, but I know some kids, maybe East Coast, West Coast, maybe you're not traveling to see as much, and to be there and to see the students and to get the culture and the atmosphere and experience all that's really, really important.
Yeah. So listeners, write this down. I like to say, write this down. It's a great lesson, Kevin. Thank you for saying that out loud. And that is what I heard you say is I heard three schools, which listeners, you should also write those down. Holy Cross, Williams, Villanova, all great schools to consider. And what you did was you went to visit on campus and experience life in real time, what it would be like to be a student there. And I know it's not necessarily something that every family can do, to travel across the country and go, you know, visit. But I always say there are plenty of colleges within a two-hour radius of wherever you live. So visit a small school, visit a large school, visit a public, a private, so that you can get a sense of what it feels like and what you like. You're going to come away with that. So thanks for saying that. That's a really a great golden nugget. So so Villanova, I love it. I have really good friends who are alums of there as well. Okay, so now you go to Villanova, and I think you did some theater there, and then you, I'm going to jump and say it out loud. You did what every good dreamer would do, picks up your bags and move out to California to pursue acting, right? So take us through that journey.
So that was that's a great story, actually, because I graduated and then one of my best friends from home, who I grew up with, went to Holy Cross. He graduated the same year, 91, that I graduated. And so we did not have jobs kind of set. And I always had education in the back of my head. But we did some summer work that summer after graduation. And he came to me sometime in the early fall, early to mid-fall. And his sister was working in Palm Springs, and his sister had done or had gone to school for kind of resort management. I'm not sure exactly what the degree was in, but that. So she was running a program at the Palm Springs Tennis Club and offered us kind of internships for the winter season, which obviously, as you know, in California is, the winter is when you want to go to Palm Springs, because that's when the weather's
right.
So he came and asked me one night, and the story goes, my mom tells the story or told the story. I was upstairs getting ready because we were going to go out and do something. And he said, I'm going to ask Kevin to move to California with me. And my mom said, the second he said it, in her head, she goes, oh my gosh, Kevin's going to go. So he asked, and I think it was literally a week later, we were in the car and we drove across the country and came to California. And then that started the journey. So.
Well, so just listeners, so Palm Springs in the summer is like 110 degrees. So the winter is a nice, comfortable, 75 or 80 degrees, and sunny every day, of course. So, so you're in California and you're doing this and you're at this resort, tough life, right? You're 20 something. You're living the dream for sure. At some point you pivot and you become an educator, and that sets you on a different path. So how did you go from resort living? I don't know how much money you were making, living on the resort, but how and why did you make the pivot?
Yeah, we were only in the resort about 6 months. Then we moved to LA, and I was trying to act for a few years. So that was kind of the short of it. And for me, what really hit me, Cynthia, is, and if anyone's ever done anything in the entertainment industry, or there are other industries probably similar to this, you recognize at some point that you could put in 20 years of really hard effort, really hard work, and still probably be waiting tables at a restaurant or, parking cars at a hotel. And I have great friends who are in that industry who are still doing those types of things, even though they're, now mid-40s, pushing 50, all those things. And that's great if you're passionate about it. But in my own head, I thought, I want to be able to work really hard at something and know that there can be a goal that I can achieve, that it doesn't have to rely on luck or some type of pipe dream. So at that point, when my wife and I got married, I went and applied to be a teacher at a Catholic school. I started teaching at a school called Cathedral Chapel in the Mid-Wilshire District by the La Brea Tar Pits, and that kind of started the educational journey then for me at that point.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. So there are a number of roles, right, that you had to – so you were waiting tables, and you could have gone on many auditions and had little gigs and then maybe a little bit medium gigs and then, but – instead, your path looks more like I'm going to do a teacher, and then I'm going to be have some administrative roles, and then I'm going to gain in responsibility. So tell us a little bit about that. Tell us about some of your favorite roles, or maybe your favorite schools along the road, because I haven't said this, but my first love is St. Bernard High School, because that's where I was first principal, and that's where I came to be part of the LA Archdiocese Schools, and I will never forget those 3 years of my life. They're some of the most life-changing events in my life and real leadership lessons. So can you share with our listeners some of those nuggets from your path?
Sure. So I was as a teacher at Cathedral Chapel, became a vice principal, and then my first principal job was at a school called St. Columbkill, which is in South LA, kind of the heart of South Central Los Angeles, which was called at the time. And then I went to a school called American Martyrs, which is kind of in the South Bay of Los Angeles, a wealthier school, a wealthier community. So I had a number of different kind of socioeconomic realities I was dealing with. And I think that helped to shape a lot of my work now, because I've got a perspective on Cathedral Chapel was kind of a middle-income community, for lack of a better word. Columbkill was definitely a lower-income, lower socioeconomic community, and then I had a higher economic socioeconomic community within American Martyrs. And if you told me where I, you know, and by the way, it's hard for me to say a favorite, because in my role now, it's like your children, right? Every school is my favorite. So it's very, very hard to say that. But my experience at, say, Columbkill was extremely special to me. I loved working in that environment. I loved working in that community. I'm passionate about Catholic education for a number of reasons, and I'm passionate about all our Catholic schools. But when I see what they can do in an urban inner city environment where you've got a community that often doesn't have much hope, and education really is the vehicle to help elevate them out of poverty, elevate them to a better way of life, it's just something incredibly inspiring to see and incredibly motivating to see. And so I'm still very connected to St. Columbkill. I still love that community. I've been on their board since I left, really. So it's going on, 17 years now or so. And so it's still a very special place in my heart. And all our schools, again, I feel very strongly about and very passionate about. But when I see the impact it can have on kids' lives, and especially those kids who are coming from home sometimes where there's not as much hope, or there's not a big expectation about college, for example, or really even thinking that way. Maybe their parents are immigrants from Mexico or from South America or somewhere else, and they don't even have that in their mindset. So being able to inspire them, really, to start to think about college and what they need to do at the elementary level, at the middle school level, and then get into a decent high school and start to pursue this and think about it. That's just tremendously rewarding, and to see students go off and do wonderful things is great and very satisfying.
Right. I mean, every single day, the Catholic educators have an opportunity every single day to help students improve themselves and inspire others around them. And really, they are leaving an impact on this world, on this place, and wherever they are teaching or leading, which is amazing. Can you, I know you kind of said that, you know, Sophie's choice, you don't want to pick any one school, but I wonder, you know, I talk about tips, tales, and truths, of course, and so is there a tale of a particular kid, so let's not talk about schools, but a particular kid that you remember working with along the way, or a family that you had a role, I love the word that you use, you know, elevate, or help inspire a student or help improve a family. Can you talk about something like that?
Yeah, you know, and there were a number of those, and a bunch come flooding in my mind. I think about, and the minute I could tell specific stories, but the story of, I guess, and maybe I can just share this, and I'm happy to then talk about a specific if you'd like, but what I'm always impressed by, or really, really just happy about knowing is are the kids who are on the margins. Maybe you got a kid who wasn't, you know, a great student, or wasn't very focused, or you know, had some issues, maybe even a learning need or something like that. And being able to work with them and work with their family, and then see over the time that they've spent with you the growth that they've achieved and the impact that they've had, I think that's just incredibly rewarding. I've had students who've come, you know, through our you know, community in South Central and then go on to Ivy League universities, and seeing, you know, the impact that would have on their lives is just incredibly incredibly powerful to me. I still think back often on students who I taught, and those students I taught now are going to be pushing 40, I guess, you know, or pushing 35 at least. And so I've connected with some of them, and the roles that they have in their lives and what they've gone on to do to impact others, I think is incredibly, rewarding, you know. And you know this as an educator, it's, you know, when you're in the midst of doing the job every single day, it's really hard sometimes because it's a difficult job. It can be a very frustrating job. It can present you with challenges and difficulties. But when you take that step back, or if you do it long enough to then see the result of your work, it just brings it all home. And to know you've played a very small part, mom and dad and all those champions and cheerleaders that you talk about obviously played maybe a greater role, but you know you had an impact on seeing where they've ended up in their lives, and that is just that's I think the great reward for educators is to know that they've played a small role in a student's success.
Right. And as we talk about improvement, inspiration, and impact, you know, again, the lesson today, or we're talking today about how, you know, you've got to find a way to improve yourself, inspire others around you in your own communities before you can really have a vision for having a bigger impact. And I know that that's what, you know, you're passionate about. I can hear the passion. And that's one of the things I loved about meeting you when you became the new leader, is to hear that passion of creating. And your book is called Changing the Ending, which I just love that title, because now that you were on the ground floor and as a teacher and as an administrator and moving into being principal, you can now sit sort of with a wider vision for a bigger, you know, a wider community and really having that impact. And so give us a little teaser. We're going to go to break in about a couple of minutes, but give us a teaser. You know, what are some of the things that are really important to you in this role now?
So what I would say maybe to lead into that is this shift when I came down to the Archdiocese, down to the kind of central office, if you will, versus being a principal. And, you know, there's a great story I tell. When I was getting my doctorate at USC, I had a mentor there. His name was Carl Cohn. He's a former superintendent in Long Beach. And I remember meeting with him, and I was probably at that point, I was a year into my work at Columbkill, so I was still a first year, second year principal. And he sat me down, and the first thing he said was, Kevin, when are you going to become a superintendent? And I remember being shocked by the question at the time, and I said, what are you talking about? And my response was, I didn't ever want to come out of the classroom. I was perfectly happy teaching. And then this principal thing kind of fell in my lap. And and he said, every good superintendent never wanted to come out of the classroom. And that's been really powerful for me, because I feel like, you know, as educators, you know, if you have, and by the way, they're wonderful, great teachers who spend their entire career as teachers, and that's a great gift, and we need them, and they're wonderful. But if you end up going into administration in some ways, you know, you might get to a point where I am now where I don't have daily interaction with students. I like to get out and visit schools. I see kids. I see students. But that's not daily, and I don't have a recess to go see them, or I can't go out and or see them in the classroom or when they leave for the day, all the things I used to do when I was a principal. And so that really is, when I first came down, it was something I had to be really intentional about. And I think we do a lot of communication within our office about the fact that we are about the education of kids. And we have great support staff here, administrative staff, and people who do a number of different things for us. And I love this story, and they say it might be apocryphal, but apparently JFK was walking through NASA in like 1962, and he ran into a janitor, and he made a comment, so what do you do here at NASA? And the janitor says, I'm helping to put a man on the moon. And I feel like that's what we want to communicate to our staff here, is that, you know, what we're doing every single day is we're educating students, even though we don't see them, even though we don't have classrooms. Our job is to educate students. And I think if we keep that mindset, it helps to keep us grounded when we're in kind of the bureaucratic, you know, which is just normal in a big, large kind of entity like the Archdiocese. It helps to keep us focused on the fact that what we're really about is educating young people.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. What a great golden nugget. We have to go to break, everyone. Stay tuned. Oh my gosh, we're just getting started and we only have a few more minutes. One last segment with Kevin. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you ready to become the applicant every college wants to admit? Would you like to become the adult that models success? Then join the thousands of students, parents, and educators who have found the perfect solution. Dr. Cynthia Colone, author of Tips, Tales, and Truths for Teens, offers motivational and empowering workshops and keynote addresses for your school or organization. She fuels confidence in students on their road to university life. Cynthia coaches parents, educators, and professionals to model a success mindset for students. Go to drcynthiacolone.com to book her to speak, receive a free consultation, or have her as your personal coach. That's Dr. Cynthia, C-O-L-O-N, drcynthiacolone.com. Visit the site today.
Are you ready for a disaster? If you are like many people in the world, that answer may sadly be no. Disasters happen unexpectedly to people just like you every day. Tune into Preparing for the Unexpected with business continuity and disaster planning expert Alex Bullock. The show will not only help you better prepare for a disaster itself, but also to prepare you, your place of employment, and community for the aftermath, emotionally, financially, and with a better level of awareness and a stronger feeling of resiliency. Tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are tuned into Destination University. If you have a question about the program for Dr. Cynthia Colone, please send an email to destinationuniversity@gmail.com. That's Destination University with a Y-O-U at gmail.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Cynthia Colone. I'm here with Dr. Kevin Baxter, who is the Senior Director and Superintendent of Catholic Schools for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Wow. If you are just tuning in, be sure to catch us at the very front end on the replay. Lots of good golden nuggets here. And Kevin just said something really great. He referenced a story that I don't know, maybe it's urban legend, but a story about JFK running to a janitor at NASA and said, "What do you do here?" And the reply was, "I'm helping to put a man on the moon." And Kevin was really likening that to his vision for what he sees is that all of us as educators in the diocese here in Los Angeles, that we see every day as an opportunity that we are, in our own way, putting our students on the moon and getting them ready for life. So Kevin, with that, I would love it if you would just share that. I know there's so much. You're such a great and inspirational leader. Share with us, what is your vision right now and what are you working on for those 80,000 students?
So we kind of established when I came in, I should have said this at probably the beginning, I'm in my 10th year in this role. In 2015, I took on the high schools as well, so I had a little bit of a shift there. I used to be superintendent for the elementary schools. But the vision we have is one of growth. We really firmly believe this big G growth idea. And so that manifests itself in a number of different ways. Obviously, if we had more students in our schools, that would be great, thinking about a sustainability model for Catholic education. But when we talk about growth, we really want to make sure that every individual within our schools, from principals to teachers to parents to students, obviously, are growing individually. They're growing in their faith life. They're growing academically. They're growing, you know, in their interactions socially. And so that idea of growth really drives all that we want to accomplish, so that if we see that growth, if we see individual growth, you'll see collective growth, we'll see school growth, and that's our great vision for what we want to see accomplished. When we set that vision, we kind of rested on two core principles. That first principle is leadership. And this is nothing new to probably people who are listening, but leadership really is the most important thing in any organization. It's leadership, leadership, leadership. And so we have a very strong focus on leadership formation. We want to recruit, retain, nurture, and develop great leaders for our schools for now and for the future. And so we have a number of different programs, from Onward Leaders to our year one program, our year two and three program. We have a thing called CAP, which is the Catholic Aspiring Principals program. So those are people who might consider leadership. But really recognizing the fact that if we have strong leaders at our schools, then we'll see successful schools. So that's the first foundational pillar. The second pillar around that our vision of growth is built on is this idea of innovation. And we describe innovation very deliberately to try to avoid everyone kind of instantaneously going to technology as kind of building this culture of continuous improvement, thinking about celebrating success that schools experience, celebrating all the wonderful things they do, but pretty soon the leader has to then ask, how can we get better? How can we improve upon past performance? And so with that, we have a number of different initiatives. We're very proud of the fact that we started dual language immersion school back in 2012, our first one in this archdiocese, and this year we have 8 of them. And we have a grant from the Conrad Hilton Foundation that we hope to renew again next year that will get us to 20 dual language immersion schools in the next 4 to 5 years. We're very proud of that, that they're growing, they're successful. It's a great way to teach language and literacy and biculturalism. And so that's been a great gift to our schools, and we've created a network model to help support them. And so with the experience we had there, we've also started this year a network model for STEM, and we're clearly defining what we mean to be STEM, because obviously out there in the education field there are a lot of different definitions and a lot of different approaches to STEM, but within our schools we're really trying to build it from the younger grades up, making sure that we have a STEM mindset at schools, which is really about growth and innovation and not settling for the status quo, not settling for where you are, but constantly trying to improve. And so building out that STEM network, where we hope eventually, you know, in a number of years we'd have 70, 80 schools perhaps within that network, is that other another area of innovation that we have. And then the final thing I'd just share, and welcome any comments you might have, Cynthia, is we had a Catholic high school up in Burbank that was struggling, and so we kind of suspended operations for a year, and we went through a whole feasibility process with the community, and we'll launch in 2019 St. John Paul II STEM Academy in Burbank, and we're very, very proud of that. We've got a great initial feedback from local schools. We've got a founding director. We've got a dean of academics, and we're really excited about seeing that growth take place within our archdiocese as well.
So I love STEM, and so it stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, for those of you listening across the country. And I imagine most people have heard that. It's also sometimes referred to STEAM, the A standing for arts. And Kevin, I'm not sure if you know this, but my dissertation was in this particular field. I wanted to look at what are we doing in high schools that can help ensure success in college. So what AP math and science courses can students take in high school that will help their retention in college with STEM fields? And I also know that, and you probably know this, that in grade school, boys and girls have the same confidence level up until about fifth or sixth grade in math and science.
Right.
And then girls tend to, that confidence level drops for a number of reasons. And if there is not an intervention, it will continue to drop, which is why we started single gender math and science courses at St. Bernard High School when I was there. So using all of that good research to pull it all together. So,
Cynthia, I should give you credit too. Because I know you did that at St. Bernard's. That's how our model at St. JP2 will be set up as well. We're calling it co-institutional. It's going to be a co-ed school, so we'll have both boys and girls. But in STEM subjects, we will have them in single gender classrooms, driven around the same research, obviously, the same stuff that you saw. But I know you did that initially over there at St. Bernard's.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That's great to hear. I was just, we should give a shout out to 4-star General Kevin P. Chilton, who was my guest last week, who is an alum of our Catholic schools. He's an alum of St. Bernard High School. So he is also someone who helped to shape that program as we were developing it. It is the season for 8th grade families to be looking at schools for high schools. And perhaps it's also this season, you know, as families are making their way to find if the Catholic school system is right for them. So can you share for our listeners, those of you who are, local listeners, but even wherever you are listening, whether you're in Connecticut or in Indiana or here in Los Angeles, share with our listeners how they go about, what's the best way to know if a school is right for them and if this Catholic education is right for them?
So again, I would go back to even the college process a little bit. It's obviously about visiting, asking questions. But when I was principal at American Martyrs, we had a parent community that was much more, I'll say this delicately, but vested in their child's success, let's say. And they would sometimes badmouth a school, you know, or be concerned about their child not getting into a certain school. And if they didn't get into that certain school, what was going to happen to them if they went to another school? And I remember telling them at the time that your child will not attend a bad high school. You know, our public schools in that area were very, very good. Mm-hmm. There were obviously a number of private school options. There were great Catholic school options and private charter school options that could be tremendously beneficial. And that you weren't going to go to a terribly negative high school. What's really important for an eighth grade family and an eighth grader to consider is what are your interests? What do you want to pursue? Academically, again, if you're looking at roughly similar schools, you're going to have a roughly similar, as far as AP course offerings and those types of things. If you're going to look at that and feel that those options are pretty consistent, then what types of programs are you interested in? Is it drama? Is it art? Is it music? Is it athletics? And then asking those questions, because you could go to whatever you think is the ideal high school and not do any extracurriculars and just focus on academics for 4 years, and then you're not going to get into a great college, where you could go to what maybe in your head is a substandard high school, take advantage of those opportunities, and you could get into an outstanding college after 4 years because you've looked at that and embraced the high school experience. And I think that's the advice I would give to eighth graders today, is make sure you embrace the high school experience. Don't just go there and go to class and come home. You know, try to make sure that you're invested in trying to take advantage of all the things that school has to offer, because that's how you grow as an individual first and foremost, but it also helps to build up those resume items that you want to make sure you include on your college application.
Embrace the high school experience. And that, for me, is like, that's a golden nugget right there. Because if you embrace the high school experience and really take advantage of everything, you know, improve yourself, find inspiration around you, and find a way to have impact. And I'm talking about improve, inspire, and impact in terms of the student. And that's really what you just said, embrace the high school experience, which will lead you to having some great college options. So you see how I just wrap that up, right? The high school, and then I always find a way to tie getting into college to that. So, well, here's the thing, listeners. Today we have been talking about improve, inspire, and impact. And here's the real truth. And I like to leave you with this quote from Mother Teresa. You can do what I cannot do. I can do what you cannot do. Together, we can do great things. Now, if that doesn't encapsulate, improve, inspire, and impact, I don't know what does. So I thought I would leave you with a quote from Mother Teresa because it seems fitting. Today, I spent my morning at St. Pius Matthias Academy doing an essay writing workshop. I'm here live. We're going to do one here at St. John Bosco. We're here with Dr. Baxter, who oversees all of these schools, 266 of them. So Kevin, before we go, share with our listeners how they can find you or a website that you'd like to share with them before I do my closing. Go ahead.
Sure. They could look at lacatholicschoolsalltogether.org to find our archdiocesan website. I'm on Twitter at kbaxter56, so you can always connect with me via Twitter. And you can find out more information about our schools on our website.
Great.
And there you go.
Thank you. Thanks for joining me today. You are my family. For additional free resources or a free consultation or to register for my boot camps, please go to www.drcynthiacolon.com. You can also email me at destinationuniversity@gmail.com. I'll see you next Wednesday at noon Pacific for another episode of Destination University. Until then, wherever you are, may you have a happy and sunny day. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening this week to Destination University. Be sure to join Dr. Cynthia Colon again next Wednesday at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. And get one step closer to your success.